The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
So we can talk about the border crisis. We can talk about the period of about 1 hour on Friday, where we learned that the drone strike that had been touted as an attack and a victory over ISIS actually killed a group of civilians, including seven children. France recalling its ambassadors from Washington because of that nuclear deal they were cut out of between the United States and the UK and Australia. And also the COVID booster news that all came on Friday. How is the White House managing all this? And what do you expect to hear from the president at the UN on Tuesday?
Well, look, I think he's got a pretty big credibility crisis on his hands, because all of these problems in some ways showed up after he said something basically the exact opposite. Afghanistan withdrawal wasn't going to be messy. This wasn't going to look like Saigon. The booster shots, he came out and essentially said 8 months, and even indicated maybe we should start it as soon as 5 months. Now we're not sure if anybody under 65 is going to get a booster shot. He's had, and of course the border has been, you know, whether this is, we can talk about the border problems. You could say there's years in the making, but it's pretty clear we have a bigger problem now than we've had in years. Look, he's got some credibility issues on the world stage, make sure that people still view America as not just a stable democracy, but a competent leader of the free world right now.
That is, of course, a committed leftist, Chuck Todd, and he's talking about the Biden administration. It's just going from bad to worse for the illegitimate presidency for Joe Biden. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Of course, we're coming to you not from our beautiful studio back in Edmond, Oklahoma. We're on the road. We're about to begin the Feast of Tabernacles, the annual fall festival. And as it happens, we're here in the Poconos, the beautiful Poconos in the heart of Pennsylvania. And the Feast of Tabernacles Festival starts this evening and will continue on through the next week. We'll be having some substitutes over the next few days. I'll be back with you on Friday for the show, and hopefully everything will work out fine with the production, as we're taking this on the road with us, all of the gear and the cameras and so on. I'll just begin with what Donald Trump said yesterday regarding some of these crises, specifically at the southern border. He says, "It's incredible that our National Guard is standing at the empty Capitol." So they had this small protest, this small little protest in Washington, D.C., of Trump supporters, people wanting justice for those jailed after January 6th. And here there's all these National Guardsmen. They're there to supposedly protect Washington, D.C. And then you see some of the images at Del Rio. You see some of the images at the southern border, this camp now, this refugee camp that has 15,000 illegal aliens. They're just flooding across the border. Nobody knows what to do with them. The Biden administration won't do anything with them. It's amazing. He says they're guarding an empty Capitol, not at our southern border, where the number of illegals coming into the country is at a level that has never been seen before. And here, as I say, you've got all these National Guardsmen up in Washington, D.C. You've got FBI infiltrators among this tiny little group. There were tweets on Saturday night of these obvious federal agents that were in there. One of them was apprehended and had a weapon, and then they find out that he has FBI an FBI badge. And they tried to make, basically to quietly walk away. But this is, again, this is America today. That's the greatest danger, the way that these communists think. They're political opponents. That's it. And they'll bring out the entire army if they have to guard against that. And meanwhile, what's happening at the southern border? Well, you see, it's like Laura Logan has said over and again. This is the desired outcome. This is what they want, what's happening at the southern border. listen again to this is Martha Raddatz on one of the Sunday shows from yesterday, clip 10.
I am now convinced that as many as 10 civilians, including up to 7 children, were tragically killed in that strike. It is unlikely that the vehicle and those who died were associated with ISIS-K or were a direct threat to U.S. forces. This strike was taken in the earnest belief that it would prevent an imminent threat to our forces and the evacuees at the airport. But it was a mistake, and I offer my sincere apology.
That stunning admission from the Pentagon that a drone strike in Kabul amid the chaotic U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan killed 10 civilians with no connection to ISIS-K. It comes with the Pentagon already reeling from the revelation that Joint Chiefs Chairman Mark Milley privately conferred with his Chinese counterpart to avert conflict in the final months of the Trump administration.
And we were talking about that Milley story last week. This, by the way, this was, I think, from Thursday of last week from the AP. It says the top U.S. military officer said Friday that calls he made, this is Milley, calls he made to his Chinese counterpart in the final stormy months of Donald Trump's presidency were, quote, perfectly within the duties and responsibilities of his job. It was just perfect to pick up the phone without Donald Trump knowing and calling this Chinese general, this tyrant, to call him up and say, hey, if the United States ever attacks you, I'll be sure to let you know. That's our leading officer in the United States military doing that. And as I don't think I got this out actually in one of the programs last week, but here he comes out with this revelation, or I guess the book that Bob Woodward and the other guy have put together. It's interesting looking at the timing of all of this, because here, as you saw in that clip I just played, they have this disastrous evacuation, and then the drone strike that kills 10 civilians, including 7 children. And then Milley comes out with this, and you look at the way a lot of people in the media were covering it, because he defiantly stood against Donald Trump. Now, all of a sudden, he scores points with the communist media, the propaganda media. Now, all of a sudden, he's a hero because he stood against the crazy and deranged Donald Trump. Should have been run out of town a long time ago. But coming back to all that's happening at the southern border, the way the evacuation was handled in Afghanistan, it's the outcome that they've wanted. My father says this in the October issue of The Trumpet. Many people say it proves Joe Biden's incompetence, but this catastrophe isn't the result of a bungling in bad judgment. It's a deliberate, planned effort to destroy America, and it has been terribly successful. On Friday, they had the announcement, you saw that in the cold open, the announcement coming from the FDA that they did not approve, overwhelmingly did not approve for Americans to get the booster shot. So they're on to, what, the third or the fourth jab in Israel, and that's what the Biden administration was out in front of the FDA. The Biden administration was saying, yeah, we're making plans for the booster now. We want people to get 3 and 4 shots. Well, it just so happens the FDA meets on Friday, and they vote 16-2, so overwhelmingly in favor of not recommending the booster shot. This was from MSNBC on Saturday.
The FDA is dealing a major setback to the White House's plan to widely distribute booster shots by the end of the year.
Data. What we saw yesterday was Pfizer, of course, the pharmaceutical giant maker of one of these vaccines, as well as some outside experts presenting information to this FDA panel of experts, arguing that because there is a decline in the efficacy of these vaccines over time, a third booster shot was warranted for a broad population of Americans. But some of these experts said that they weren't sure that the benefits here potentially outweighed the risks.
So that's from MSNBC, and I'll get to the New York Times here in just a moment. But really, the coverage, the way that they covered this hearing, it went on for 8 hours, and some of the testimony, it's stunning, really. And Andrew Loker was bringing this up to me over the weekend. I mean, just the fact that these officials, from the medical community, were called on to testify shows that they have credentials. And some of the things that were brought out, again, if America only, if the news media were telling you the truth about the vaccine, about the booster, about all of the terrible side effects. As it is, there's a lot of people in America that know, because they know someone that's had adverse effects. They know someone that's died from it. So the FDA decides 16-2, nope, no booster, not yet. We don't have enough evidence to suggest that it helps. It's pretty amazing. This hearing, by the way, at the hearing, this was from Friday, Dr. Steve Kirsch. Listen to what he had to say about this vaccine, this clip 4.
I'm going to focus my remarks today on the elephant in the room that nobody likes to talk about, that the vaccines kill more people than they save. Today, we focus almost exclusively on COVID death saves and vaccine efficacy because we were led to believe that the vaccines are perfectly safe. But this is simply not true. For example, there were 4 times as many heart attacks in the treatment group in the Pfizer 6-month trial report. That wasn't bad luck. Theirs shows heart attacks happen 71 times more often following these vaccines compared to any other vaccine. In all, 20 people died who got the drug, 14 died who got the placebo. Few people notice that. If the net all-cause mortality from the vaccines is negative, vaccines, boosters, and mandates are all nonsensical. This is the case today. Even if the vaccines had 100% protection, it still means we kill 2 people to save 1 life. 4 experts did analyses using completely different non-U.S. data sources, and all of them came up with approximately the same number of excess vaccine-related deaths, about 411 deaths per million doses. That translates into 150,000 people have died.
Notice there that this doctor, he cites VAERS, basically. There's testimony there where they're just pointing to what the CDC has been tracking itself. These thousands of deaths, up to 16,000 now just in the United States. 500,000 cases reported. Listen to this other professional. This is Dr. Joseph Frerman, an ER physician from New Orleans, clip 5.
I know many think the vaccine hesitants are dumb or just misinformed. That's not at all what I've seen. In fact, typically, independent of education level, the vaccine hesitants I've met in the ER are more familiar with vaccine studies and more aware of their own COVID risk than the vaccinated. For example, many of my nurses have refused the vaccine, despite having seen COVID-19 cause more death and devastation than most people have. I ask them, why refuse the vaccine? They tell me while they've seen the firsthand dangers of COVID in the elderly, the obese, diabetics, they think their risk is low. They're not wrong.
They're not wrong to think this. Now, why? Just think for a moment. He's talking, you know, people in the media, Don Lemon and those types will say, for those that don't want the vaccine, that they're ignorant, they're dumb. In fact, here's a healthcare professional who's saying these are actually the ones that are looking into what's in the vaccine. These are actually the ones that are doing a little bit of research. And then he says a lot of my nurses don't want the vaccine, and yet they're around all these COVID patients all the time. So why wouldn't they want? If it's this terrifying pandemic that's just killing people all over the place and you're wanting to save your life, people would be lining up to take this vaccine. But they know about the comorbidities, they know about your chances of survival, they know of all these side effects. These nurses know about the side effects regarding the vaccines. Let me just give you one more bit of testimony from Friday's hearing. This comes from Dr. Jessica Rose, and she's commenting on just the alarming adverse events reported on the VAERS website, the CDC website. This is clip 6.
There's an over 1,000% increase in the total number of adverse events for 2021, and we are not done with 2021. This is highly anomalous on both fronts. These increased reporting rates are not due to increased rates in injection and not due to simulated reporting. This has been shown using a comparative analysis of influenza data. The onus is on the public health officials, the FDA, the CDC, and policymakers to answer to these anomalies and acknowledge the clear risk signals emerging from VAERS data.
They've got to answer for all of these anomalies before they just push these vaccines and intimidate. They were making calls on CNN last week to really shame the unvaccinated into getting the jab. Someone sent me this report from 2 healthcare professionals, the vaccine death report. Just listen to this. It's the opening summary. It says VAERS data, and all of this is based upon government reported data. It says VAERS data as of August 26, it's already 500,000 people suffered severe side effects. 16,000 people have died as a result of receiving the experimental injection. It says, however, according to the CDC whistleblower who signed a sworn affidavit, the actual number of deaths is at least 5 times higher. So 80,000 at least. And then you know about the VAERS website and how that most of those cases aren't reported. They're not even reported. Further on in this report, just gives some bullet points. It says VAERS published 16,000 plus deaths, 450,000 adverse events as of end of August. CDC fraud experts said that number of deaths is at least 5 times higher. 150,000 reports have been rejected or scrubbed by the VAERS system. The actual number further on, it says vaccinated people who die within 2 weeks are not listed as vaccine deaths. So there's lots of ways, in other words, that they're trying to downplay or downsize some of these shocking figures that last woman was just bringing to the attention of the FDA on Friday. Look, if it's 1,000% higher than anything we've seen before 2021, how do you explain that? Who's out there even offering any kind of an explanation? There she was at the FDA hearing, and you would think that would be making the headlines. It did get some coverage. You heard the soundbite where they said, yeah, this is a big hit for the Biden administration. Look at this headline from the New York Times. FDA advisory panel. This is the New York Times on Saturday, following the overwhelming defeat for this booster shot. It says here, FDA advisory panel recommends Pfizer boosters for older people and others at high risk. So that's the takeaway from the New York Times. Now you get into the article and there's at least some honesty, but that's a very dishonest headline. That's to say the FDA advisory recommends. Well, they did for this tiny, tiny, tiny little group. But for the rest in America, don't get the booster. We don't have enough information yet. We don't have the statistics yet. It says here the committee, this is from the New York Times article, a key advisory panel to the FDA overwhelmingly rejected recommending Pfizer booster shots for most recipients of the company's coronavirus vaccine. It says the vote, the first on boosters in the U.S., was a blow to the Biden administration's strategy to make extra shots available to most fully vaccinated adults in the United States 8 months after they received a second dose. The broader rollout was to start next week. So this is something, as I say, the Biden administration had already decided to do this. It didn't even wait on the FDA. Now the FDA comes along and says, nope, we're not going to approve it. We can't do it. It says some also criticized a lack of data that an additional injection would be safe for younger people. The committee of largely outside experts voted 16-2 against a Pfizer booster for people 16 and older after a tense day-long public discussion that put divisions in the agency and the administration on public display. Officials from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the National Institutes of Health joined infectious disease experts and doctors in voting against additional shots for such a broad swath of the population. So another big hit, as I say, for Joe Biden's fake presidency. It says the committee's rejection of boosters for everyone over 16 was the latest setback for the plan that Mr. Biden announced a month ago. The announcement prompted weeks of criticism from public health experts who accused the administration of trying to set booster policy before FDA and CDC clearance. Now they're just forcing it through. That's what they want. And remember what they were saying when they were accelerating this process last year during the final months of the Trump presidency? Well, I've played you that montage before. I think that's coming up, if you know what that is, Sam. Skip ahead to... number three.
I think it's going to be a very skeptical American public about taking the vaccine, and they should be.
We can't trust the president and take his word and take a vaccine that might cause harm to us.
If and when the vaccine comes, and it's not likely to go through all the tests that needs to be and the trials that are needed to be done.
Let's just say there's a vaccine that is approved and even distributed before the election. Would you get it?
Well, I think that's going to be an issue for all of us.
When we finally do, God willing, get a vaccine, who's going to take the shot? Who's going to take the shot?
We will need to have access to the vaccine results so we can make our independent assessment to make sure that Donald Trump's fingerprints are not on it.
You can be the first one to say, put me, sign me up. They now say it's okay.
Is the vaccine safe? Frankly, I'm not going to trust the federal government's opinion. And I wouldn't recommend to New Yorkers based on the federal government's opinion.
And the question of whether it's real when it's there, that requires enormous transparency.
Would you trust that vaccine?
There's very little that we can trust that comes out of Donald Trump's mouth.
We cannot take for granted this process will be free of political influence.
I don't trust the president, and I don't trust the FDA.
If Donald Trump can't give answers and the administration can't give answers to these three questions, the American people should not have confidence.
You're going to say to the American people now, here's a vaccine, it was new, it was done quickly, but trust this federal administration and their health administration that it's safe?
I will say that I would not trust Donald Trump.
Hey, how confident are you in the approval process of the FDA right now?
How confident am I? I'm not that confident.
Yes, I would be hesitant, but I'm going to ask a lot of questions.
You're going to need someone other than this FDA and this CDC saying it's safe.
But if Donald Trump tells us that we should take it, I'm not taking it.
I mean, they all sounded like anti-vaxxers just a year ago, just a few months ago. One Democrat after another. Nah, if Donald Trump hurries this along, I'm not going to take it. Governor Cuomo, or the former governor, he's there saying he didn't trust even the CDC and the FDA. And now look at how they've changed their tune. Now you need to be shamed. If you don't take the vaccine, you need to be shamed into it. Down in Australia, I mean, it's even more extreme than here. You've got people down there saying you can't even really function, or you shouldn't be able to, unless you get the jab. Skip ahead to this is the Chief Minister Michael Gunner, of Australia's Northern Territory, clip two.
So if you want your business to stay open during an outbreak, make sure your workers are vaccinated. Businesses and venues will have the right to refuse entry to unvaccinated people, whether or not there is an outbreak. So I'll say it again and again. If you want your life to continue close to normal, get your jab. For vaccinated people, the check-in app will basically be your freedom pass. For people who make the choice to not get vaccinated, no vax means no freedom pass.
That's from Australia's Northern Territory, which has had a grand total of zero deaths due to COVID and 203 cases. And there he is saying that if you want to have a normal life, you've got to get the vaccine. There were some medical officials from Israel testifying at that FDA hearing on Friday. Israel, as I say, they're into the third and fourth jab, and yet this past summer in Israel, they've had this massive outbreak of COVID. Israel's one of the most vaccinated nations in the world, and they're dealing with not just three and four jabs, they're dealing with three and four waves of COVID. They can't stop it. The vaccines aren't working there. Notice this from that New York Times article. It says Dr. Sharon Pries, Israel's head of public health services, said the summer's rise in the number of hospitalized patients who had been fully vaccinated with Pfizer's vaccine was scary. She said 60% of severely or critically ill patients and 45% of those who died during what was called the fourth surge had received two injections of the Pfizer vaccination or the Pfizer vaccine. So they're getting the injection, they're getting the vaccine, and in some cases they're dying of COVID. And no one seems to want to make any connections to the vaccine. Chris Rock just got COVID and is tweeting to his followers, hey, you got to get the vaccine. He got his. He got two jabs back in the spring. And now he's suffering from COVID. And he says, it's nasty. You don't want to get it. So I hope you get vaccinated. The New York Times, it says, Dr. William C. Gruber, a senior Pfizer. This is what astounds me the most, is when you have the officials the vice president's, the senior advisor at Pfizer coming out and saying, hey, everything's perfect. We've tested it ourselves. So we know it's going to be great. This is in the New York Times article. It says, Dr. William Gruber, a senior Pfizer vice president in charge of vaccine development, suggested that if the U.S. does not follow Israel's lead, it could face more than 5 million more infections. Well, of course he thinks that. If you don't get our vaccine, if we don't follow Israel's lead, Israel's into the third and fourth jab. So now we've got to go that way. Otherwise, you're going to have a lot more infections. That's what a senior vice president at Pfizer, what are their record profits at now? $20, $30 billion? Of course they want you to get the jab. Listen to Clive Palmer. He's been an outspoken critic of the vaccinations in Australia. Listen to what he said about these companies, Pfizer and AstraZeneca. This is clip 8.
More concerning to me personally is the fact that both Pfizer and AstraZeneca would not allow their products to be sold in Australia unless the Australian government gave them a full indemnity. If they killed anyone or maimed them, they wouldn't be responsible, the government would be. So I find that a very disturbing thing, that the government didn't take the view and say, well, if you're confident in your product, you should stand behind it.
That's right. If it's such a perfect product, then why are they demanding that the Australian government give them, as he said, their full indemnity in case their drugs kill anybody? They want immunity. They got it here in the United States. So before they even sell it to Australia, the Australian government, they want the government to guarantee that if there's any deadly side effects, that it's going to be on the government, certainly not on Pfizer. Pfizer can't do anything wrong. Well, you heard from the senior vice president. He said, if you don't get these vaccinations going, we could have 5 million more infections. This was from the USA Today just this morning. It says here, Pfizer Biotech's COVID-19 vaccine is safe and effective for children ages 5 to 11. So they want the 5-year-olds to get the jab now. Notice it says, though, at 1/3 the dose. That right there makes you wonder, well, why not the full dosage? If it's perfect, if it's saving lives all over the place, why not give them the full jab, the full dose? 5 to 11, 1/3 the dose used in adults and adolescents, according to this new study from where? From the companies, of course. This is Pfizer conducting their own internal study and deciding that it's safe. It's safe for your little children. So give them the jab. This was from the Daily Telegraph just last week. This headline says, teenage boys more at risk from vaccines than COVID. Can you believe this? Teenage boys, they're more at risk from the vaccine than COVID, from the disease itself. Think about what we were saying last summer. The cure, it's worse than the disease. The cure is killing us. You've got all these cases of myocarditis, these heart problems, strokes. I got an email just last week from a viewer of this program. Got the double jab and 3 strokes thereafter. 3 strokes for this individual. These are cases that are just happening all over the place. This report that I read to you earlier from those 2 doctors, it talks about how, I forget where the station was, but basically they wanted to do a report now that the vaccines are out. They put it up on Facebook and they said, hey, if you had any loved ones die from COVID, we're wanting to sort of do a story on the pandemic and so on. And this Facebook page, instead of getting people responding with relatives that died because of COVID, there was just a deluge of people saying, well, I don't know anyone who died of COVID, but I definitely have some relatives that have really suffered because of the vaccine. 200,000 responses to this Facebook page. And all these people are like, I hope you do a story on the vaccines and the side effects. But people won't do it. This guy in his report talks about all the pressure that hospitals are under, or that doctors are under. And of course, doctors are part of the problem for even recommending these vaccines. And so when patients are dying, they're not going to come out and say, well, I had a hand in this. They're just going to cover it up. And that's what's happening in the media, in the medical profession. They're just covering it up. Well, there at least was some honest testimony on Friday at the FDA hearing. Going back to the Telegraph here. Young males are 6 times more likely to suffer from heart problems after being jabbed than be hospitalized from coronavirus. So you get the jab and you could go to the hospital. You get COVID-19 as a young boy, you're probably hardly going to even notice it. It says here, teenage boys are 6 times more likely to suffer from heart problems from the vaccine than to be hospitalized. Well, I read that. It says children who face the highest risk of cardiac adverse event are boys aged between 12 and 15. So we're risking our children because of this obsession coming from all these Pfizer execs, Fauci, Biden. Listen to Clive Palmer. This was in the same speech he gave recently, clip 9.
In Australia, we've got a very good system of approvals normally for vaccines, over a 10-year period normally, a 7 to 10-year period. And one of the major requirements is that there is substantial safety data at 2, 3, and 5 years. The other requirement is that there's safety studies for testing in pregnant women and for children. There's been no studies done of any of these vaccines. And what I'm in favour of is protecting that approval system. That's what I'm in favour. I'm saying if a vaccine hasn't gone through those approvals, we shouldn't be willy-nilly putting it into the whole population. That's my point of view. But everybody, including members of our party, are entitled to their own opinion.
So people should have the option to get vaccinated?
Well, it's the option. It's freedom of choice in Australia.
There he is saying, basically, look, in every other case, there's an approval process that goes on for, in some cases, years and years. This was rushed through. This is an experiment on humanity. This did not go through the normal approval process, not at all. And so he's saying, why can't we just go back to the more sensible time that we had before COVID-19 came along? It's not a vaccine, not in the traditional sense. And what about that woman's testimony on Friday, saying all these adverse reactions, these cases, severe reactions, 1,000% more than in previous years? And we're not even done with 2021 yet. We've still got a few months left. Really shocking, stunning testimony on Friday. And if you had more honest journalists in media, they'd be telling you what some of these sound bites that we played on this program today were saying on Friday. Doesn't get nearly enough coverage, and we'll try to make sure that it does. When we come back, we will conclude today's program with some meat in due season. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the program, you can send us feedback, td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily.
Breathing out, breathing in, more precious than it's ever been. We can't take it for granted. Never in our lifetimes has that fact been clearer. That precious breath of life. It might start to shorten. It might struggle. It might cease. How can it be protected? How can it be prolonged? How can it be saved? And what is the purpose anyway? What is the purpose of human life? What should you use that breath for? Most of us turn to doctors. It's a reflex, but it's becoming more and more clear that the medical industry does not have all the answers. It can be amazingly helpful, but can it actually heal? Is this the place to turn for healing after all? The human body, human breath, human life was designed, powered, preserved. It was created. Who made it? With something so important as your life, you need to know the creator of life. The Plain Truth About Healing by Herbert W. Armstrong will show you from your Bible the answers to the questions even most Christians are afraid to ask. Is the day of miracles past? Does the living God heal sickness? Did God raise up medical science for our day? What is the role of doctors? You can have not only sound health, but a sound mind. Go to thetrumpet.com and search The Plain Truth About Healing by Herbert W. Armstrong.
The Trumpet Daily.
My father has referred to a prophecy in Malachi 3 before about how that God says, bring in all of the tithes and the offerings so that you can then use it to get a message out to this world, to give the truth to the whole world. We really do want to, coming into the Feast of Tabernacles and the last great day, you really have to expand your vision and to think about not just the small or little flock that is God's church today, but to see where that this work, God's work, is leading. This is from the God Family Vision book. It says, the Feast of Tabernacles is a feast of ingathering, picturing a time when God will use us to gather in the whole world. It's called a feast of ingathering because God has called the church, members in God's church today, he has called us to prepare for this ingathering, this feast of ingathering, Deuteronomy 16. Let's notice verse 13. It says, you shall observe the Feast of Tabernacles 7 days. After that, you have gathered in your corn and your wine. So when you've gathered, Leviticus 23 says, when you have gathered in the fruit of the land. So it's a gathering in period. And when you understand this or think about this spiritually, as I say, this is a message for the world, the whole world. Verse 14, it says, and you shall rejoice in your feast. So God actually commands it. He says, you come to the Feast of Tabernacles and rejoice. Rejoice. Verse 15, 7 days shall you keep a solemn feast unto the Eternal your God in the place which the Eternal shall choose. Because the Lord your God shall bless you in all your increase and in all the works of your hands, therefore you shall surely rejoice. So there was a lot of work that went into this fall harvesting period. And God, it says there, he would bless the work of your hands. It's a hands-on operation that God's talking about here. It's a very practical, Mr. Armstrong used to talk about the Christian way of life and that it's just a very practical way of living. We're here to learn and to obey God's laws, to apply them into our lives, our families, with our children, our marriages. Switch over to Exodus 23. This is verse 16. It says here, and the feast of harvest, the fruits of your labors, which you have sown in the field, and the feast of ingathering, it says there, the feast of ingathering, which is in the end of the year, when you have gathered in your labors out of the field, gathered in, this is really a monumental job when you understand, again, the spiritual meaning here. When you understand Malachi 3, when you understand the message being for the whole world, we know about the smaller spring harvest season, culminating in Pentecost, of course, but the fall harvest, a much greater harvest. Everyone will have an opportunity to have their minds open to the truth. What a different world that will be. Last week, we spent a fair bit of time in our studies on the return of Jesus Christ, the greatest event in the history of the universe. God finally establishing his government on earth, removing, banishing Satan the devil from this earth, banishing him to a bottomless pit, and then the righteous government of Jesus Christ ruling the earth, and the bride of Christ, that's the church, assisting him, complimenting him, teaching all of mankind, a message for the whole world. Notice the New Testament, this is Matthew chapter 3 and verse 36. Jesus was constantly trying to expand the vision of his disciples, as well. Matthew 9:36, it says, "But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them, because they fainted and were scattered abroad as sheep having no shepherd. Then say he unto his disciples, the harvest truly is plenteous, but the laborers are few. Pray you therefore the eternal of the harvest, that he will send forth laborers into his harvest." So even in the work that we have to do today, before the return of Jesus Christ, Christ said there, look, pray for more laborers. There's such a huge work to do. There's so much to finish before the return of Christ. So pray for more to come along. Pray for the income of the work to increase. Pray for the tithes and the offerings to be used wisely. Pray that we would be wise stewards. Pray that the message would go out. Pray that it would really have an impact on the minds of men, on the minds of mankind. Colossians 1 and verse 27, it says here, this is Paul's writing, it says, "To whom God would make known that the riches of the glory of this mystery among the Gentiles, which is Christ in you, the hope of glory." God making known this mystery. It says in the Colossians booklet, my father's booklet on the subject of Colossians, it says, "The feast of ingathering, or tabernacles, is about getting this message to the world, to gather in as many as we can, and that will continue into the world tomorrow." So even the mindset that we have today, this expansive view that we take today, the reason it's so important is it's going to just extend right into the wonderful world tomorrow, where God's truth is going to reach into every square inch of property on earth. It says here, "Where a major textbook in all educational institutions will be Mystery of the Ages by Herbert Armstrong." It says, anytime this mystery was revealed in the past, God wanted his very elect to make it known to the Gentiles. That's why God reveals it. He doesn't reveal it so we can just sit there and look at it or enjoy it ourselves. It's for the whole world. We will gather them all in. It's a feast of ingathering. God says, rejoice. See where this is leading. Verse 28, this is Colossians 1 still. It says, "Whom we preach, warning every man and teaching every man in all wisdom, that we may present every man perfect in Christ Jesus." Every single man, that's what God stresses here. We teach them, we warn today, but I mean, we're going to be sitting down and teaching all of mankind in the world tomorrow. In the Ezekiel booklet, my father's booklet, it says, "We must be world-oriented. God is working in terms of preparing us for eternity." It's important that we take a world view. It's important that we take a long view, that we look ahead. It says in verse 29, "Wherefore I also labor," Paul says, "striving according to his working, which works in me mightily." So it involved a lot of labor, hard work for the Apostle Paul. And you see that in so many examples in the Bible. People that just made sacrifices. Of course, Jesus Christ is our greatest example of all. He sacrificed everything so that God could have a family. And we're reminded of this awesome purpose every year with the seven annual festivals, starting with Passover in the spring, the memorial of the death of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, the Savior of the world. And then right after Passover, you have the Days of Unleavened Bread, which picture our coming out of this world, removing sin from our lives, filling up on the righteousness of God, filling up on the unleavened bread of righteousness. And then the conclusion to that small spring harvest, the Feast of Pentecost, the first fruits harvest to occur at the day Christ returns to this earth. And then, of course, you get into the fall festivals, the Feast of Trumpets, representing the return of Jesus Christ. And then Atonement, which we talked about last week, the Feast of Atonement, revealing Satan's fate in God's plan and purpose. Satan is ultimately removed and banished And then you come into the Feast of Tabernacles and the Last Great Day. The Last Great Day advancing the vision far into the future, even out into the universe. Everyone who's ever lived brought back to life in a physical resurrection so that they can learn God's way of life and so that they can live the way that God's people are supposed to be living today, even in Satan's society. Now we are rewarded for resisting against the devil, and it is much more difficult to stay faithful in this period where the devil's influence is just so strong. I mean, the whole world is sick. This world is dying, and so many of God's people have just gone the way of the world. They've gone right back into the world. They've joined the world, and Jesus said, come out of the world so that you can be God's children, so that you can marry Jesus Christ. Well, coming back to the Feast of Tabernacles, this festival that begins tonight, I just want to conclude here with one simple, very basic point, in that we have to ready our minds. I've mentioned about expanding the vision, but we really do have to ready or prepare our minds for a lot of difficult labor. I mean, it's going to be so rewarding and so exciting to see the impact that labor, that work has on the earth and on people's lives. But we've got to be prepared to work hard. The world tomorrow, as wonderful as it is, as wonderful as it will be to build a utopia, it's certainly not a vacation. People can sometimes think about utopia and think that, well, there's no work, everything's incredibly beautiful, peaceful. It takes work, a lot of diligent work to build a godly society, to raise up ruins. Look at the history of this work just in the past 31 years, just since the Laodicean Rebellion or since the death of Herbert Armstrong in 1986. We've had to work hard with God's help and direction and inspiration. We've had to fight for the truth. We've had to fight for Herbert Armstrong's literature. The wonderful world tomorrow will be wonderful because so many people will be laboring together to build up a Garden of Eden utopia. Notice John chapter 4. John chapter 4 and verse 31. This is, of course, the way God and the Word think, or God and Jesus Christ, the Word who became flesh, who came in the flesh as Jesus Christ, God in the flesh. Notice it says in John 4 and verse 31, in the mean while his disciples prayed him, saying, Master, eat. So this is that section of scripture where Jesus meets up with this woman of Samaria at Jacob's well. And in verse 32, Jesus said, I have meat to eat that you know not of. So the disciples, they didn't yet have God's Spirit. That would happen later. So there were some things that Jesus said to them that they didn't really understand at the time. Their understanding would come later. Their minds would come open to it later. But it says here in verse 34, Jesus said unto them, my meat is to do the will of him that sent me and to finish his work, to finish the work of God. That's my meat. That's what fueled Jesus Christ. He skipped a meal from time to time, doing the work of God. That's where he got his real sustenance. That's what, as I say, what fueled him. It's what motivated him. It was his passion. He was here to finish the work. He lived life with a sense of urgency. He had a relatively short physical life, but he poured his heart into serving God. This is from the book, John's Gospel, The Love of God. My father said, this is the key to having passion and high spirits. The work of God has a built-in vision of joy. It always keeps us looking beyond the difficulties of the present and seeing where this is all leading. See, we've got to bring this godly passion into our work for Christ. Finish the work. That's what Jesus was focused on. I've got to finish. I've got to complete this project. in the book again. It says, if you get your heart into God's work and give it everything you have, it will give you all the exuberance and joy God has to give us on earth. If we just put our hearts into the work, we'll be filled with joy. God made us. He made us to work. Too many people today, they just seek after, you know, the quick and easy way. A life of idleness and ease. That's not what God made us to do. And that doesn't bring happiness and joy into your life. Doing a work for God, that's where it's at. That's where it gets really exciting and wonderful. Verse 35, it says, "Say not you, there are yet 4 months, and then comes the harvest." It says, "Behold, I say to you, lift up your eyes and look on the fields, for they are white already to harvest." Just lift up your eyes and look. Have some vision. See where this is leading. Don't bog down like Baruch did there in Jeremiah 45 and get your mind on your own things. Or don't even bog down thinking that well, not enough people are responding to this message. Lift up your eyes and see. See the harvest. We're ready to do some harvesting. This is from the James booklet. It says, God is committed to finishing not just the first fruit harvest, but the entire harvest. God has only just gotten started with us. The greatest work lies yet ahead. The greatest work, that's ahead of us. That's something Mr. Armstrong said at the end of his life. At the end of his 50-some year ministry and hundreds of thousands of supporters from all over the world. And yet he said right there in the last year of his life, the greatest work lies ahead. You see, he was always thinking about the future. Expanding the vision, expanding the work, finishing God's work. Verse 36 says, "And he that reaps receives wages and gathers fruit unto life eternal, that both he that sows and he that reaps may rejoice together. And herein is that saying true, one sows and another reaps. I sent you to reap that wherein you bestowed no labor. Other men labored, and you are entered into their labors." So here we're coming into this at really the really exciting part of the job. We get to do the harvesting. We get to see the fruit of the labor. There is no greater job or responsibility on earth today. And as I say, it extends, this vision extends right into the wonderful world of tomorrow. Notice what it says over in John 5. We'll just conclude with this. As I say, this is built into the God family, this laboring mindset, or this mindset to labor and to work and to finish God's work. You've often heard us on this program even refer to the work of the church, and we just call it the work when we're talking about this church and what it does, because we're here to labor for God. We're here to fulfill all of God's will. Notice John 5 and verse 17. In this verse, Jesus says, "My Father works hitherto, and I work." See, God the Father and Christ the Son, they're both workmen. They're both workmen. In Ephesians 3:9, it says, "God created all things by or through Jesus Christ." And you see a similar statement in John chapter 1. And so as we prepare to observe the feast of ingathering, to observe the feast of tabernacles, we have to come into this fall festival with a mind to work, with a mind that's ready to build the family of God, with a mind that's ready to advance this vision far beyond even the confines of this earth, to take the vision of God, the work of God, the family of God, even out into the farthest reaches of the universe. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining us on location here at the Poconos in beautiful Pennsylvania. If you'd like to submit some feedback, you can write to the program. Our email address is td@thetrumpet.com. www.thetrumpitdaily.com. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.